Hi, everyone.
Hi, guys.
Welcome to Wicked, Weird, and Grim, your number one podcast for a trip through the history of the odd, haunting, and mystifying. I'm Ara.
And I'm Caroline. Together, we're the Grimm Sisters. Today, we have a really fun and lighthearted episode, very much more weird than Wicked or Grim, like the past two were. And you guys will never be able to guess what we're covering. Here's a hint. Isle of Man, Dalby Spook, Jeff with a G.
It's Jeff the Talking Mongoose, a.k.a. the Dalby Spook. And if you have no idea what we're saying, don't worry. It will all make sense in the end. Hopefully.
Honestly, maybe not. But that seems to be a running theme on our show, the unexplainable and incomprehensible.
Very true. Just like us.
Yeah.
And today's topic, like we said, is just... it's just weird. Not to overuse that adjective, but it's definitely one of those stories that sticks with you and makes you go, huh.
It definitely leaves you with more questions and answers, guys, so be prepared.
Just generally have that mindset when listening to our podcast, honestly.
Definitely. So our story today starts off with a family of three, James Irving, Margaret Irving, and their daughter, Vori. These three moved to the Isle of Man in 1916 and lived on a pretty remote farm about a mile from the local town known as Dalby.
And in early fall of 1931, the Irving family started hearing these really weird tapping and knocking noises from their walls and their ceiling, and they initially assumed that was because of a mouse or some other little creature, which to me sounds really plausible. That's definitely what I would think at first.
Same. It's exactly what I would think of. Like, I've heard a mouse in the walls before, mm-hmm. and it definitely just sounds like
very
a little
scratchy.
Like, every now and then you just kind of, like, everything is quiet and you just hear like a...
Is it a mouse or is it a demon?
It's a demon.
In the walls.
As the tappings and knockings continued, the family shifted their thoughts to thinking that their house was home to a small weasel known as a stoat, and they thought it was trapped in the wall of their farmhouse.
And they were half right when they thought that. In late October, James and Vori got their first glimpse of the animal, and they described it as yellow, brown, and rat-like with a long, bushy tail.
Sounds cute.
It does sound cute to me, but I mean, I don't know, I guess people who don't like rats wouldn't find the same.
But it's got a bushy tail.
It's cute. It's like a little squirrel. They said it wasn't seemingly frightened of them and kind of lingered around, and it made noises they compared to an infant babbling when they're trying to learn to talk. So
the family started hearing words emanating from the walls, so they decided for some reason to have a bit of fun with it and teach the creature nursery rhymes. Because why not?
I don't know why that was their first inclination. Like, that would definitely not be mine.
Mine either. I would be like, this is really weird.
This is not a Fisher-Price commercial, Irving family.
Oh, my goodness. Well, apparently the Irvings thought it was, because in no time the creature could speak fluently back to them and would literally have entire conversations with them.
It's just so weird. It's like, we have a little talking buddy, and he lives in our walls. And not only did he talk really fluently and have entire conversations with them, but he apparently also picked up other languages really easily, including French, German, Yiddish, Flemish, Spanish, and Hebrew. I don't know, I'm kind of in love with this mongoose, because it's just a mongoose after my own heart.
A polyglot after, just like you are.
He's so cute.
He's so cute.
Talk to me in Yiddish, sir. Been around the world, don't speak the language.
What talk, is that?
Talk dirty to me. I mean, that song kind of fits well because
he had a bit of a mouth on him.
He was prone to cursing, a very bad habit for him apparently, and also had some very capricious mood swings and just a love of drama in general. And he would apparently sneak out to neighbors' houses around the island and come back to the Irving household with island gossip and just tell them everything that was going on. Honestly, the only thing I can think of is that, like, he would have thrived on the Real Housewives of the Isle of Man.
Gossip Jeff. Not Gossip Girl, but Gossip Jeff.
Have I got a story for you. Welcome back to Gossip Jeff.
The scandalous lives of the Isle of Man's elite.
The elite of the Isle of Man. There's like seven people.
I like two families. He would have been the star of the show, though, because not only did he talk, he apparently enjoyed singing songs, telling jokes. He could change shape and appeared to be clairvoyant.
Not unlike us.
Absolutely. We definitely are clairvoyant.
Definitely. So. We can totally see that our podcast is going to be utterly famous.
Yes.
Even more oddly than this, Jeff claimed to be... I just can't do this. Jeff claimed to be 80 years old, and he said he was born in Delhi, India in 1852.
In relation to that, James Irving gave a lot of conflicting statements on what and who Jeff was. He sometimes said Jeff was a spirit in animal form. Other times he said Jeff was a mongoose, but a hybrid or peculiar kind, which is definitely an understatement.
I mean, I've never heard of a mongoose who talks.
Yeah, I mean, definitely special.
Whatever he is or was, I think the name Dolby Spook is just perfect because, you know, you don't have to label him as a mongoose or whatever it is. It's like, he's just a spooky thing from Dolby.
He was definitely spooky, and apparently Jeff was super hostile towards the Irvings initially. He would insult them, swear at them, threaten them, terrorize them at night, and he even went so far as to start throwing rocks at them.
That's not very nice.
What a jerk.
Apparently he could be reasoned with, though. Within a year of his first appearance, the Irvings actually struck some kind of truce with Jeff, and he then kind of became a part of the family. He would even catch and kill rabbits, and then he'd leave them on the doorstep kind of like a little cat. Aww. When they leave their little presents.
I told you he was cute. I knew he was cute. He was apparently so good at catching rodents and stuff that the Irvings even sold the surplus rabbits in Dolby. So they were making money off of Jeff's catches.
Cha-ching!
Yeah.
I mean, kind of in that same vein, Jeff would also stick up for the family. He would offer to slaughter the livestock of any of the Irvings' enemies. And he was particularly protective of the daughter of Vori.
It's like a Disney movie come to life with lots more swearing and slaughtering of livestock. You know, like, you can just see the little cartoon drawing of, like, this little, like, spooky mongoose.
I've come to slaughter your livestock.
Him and the Irving family, like, becoming really close and, like, protecting each other.
It's cute, though. I like it. It reminds me of this short story by Kipling called Rikki Tikki Tavi, and it's about a little talking mongoose, and he would face off these, like, giant cobras. I literally have that movie, like, right in my cabinet right there. I love it so much.
I remember reading the, like, little poem when I was in middle school. It was so cute.
My grandparents actually brought the VCR tape of Rikki Tikki Tavi back to me, and they were like, do you want to keep these? And I was like, yes. That's my life. And I would force my grandpa to watch it with me.
Like a thousand times.
And he'd be like, what are you doing? It has the same exact plot.
It's the same every time you watch it, Aura.
But, you know, I wanted to think it would be different. Although, it had a happy ending,
yeah,
so.
It does. Because he kills the snakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although, it makes me feel bad as well, because, well, I love snakes. I love snakes so much, but
yeah.
I will say,
those snakes
cobras are, they're those scary. Were very they're scary and mm-hmm. aggressive, so.
They're really cool, though. They're so big.
I think so. I think it's really awesome how they have the little hoods.
Yeah, and, like, the king cobra can go so far, like, up off the ground.
It
can
it's kind of
like
weird.
With a person, which is so scary, but, like...
All I think of is, like, a little spring, like a boingy spring, where it's, like...
Yeah.
Imagine, like, you look over and there's just a cobra making dead eye contact with you at your same height.
I would be like, you don't need to bite me, I'm already dead.
Carolyn and I were discussing earlier about whether we have fight or flight syndrome, or what we gear towards, and I was like, I have neither. I have freeze. I just freeze, and I just stand there like a little deer in the headlights.
That would, I feel like, definitely be me if I came to, like, eye to eye with a snake like that. I would just be like,
I feel like
you're
I would
not
be...
supposed to be up here.
Exactly. Excuse
this is
me, sir.
Why are you like this? Why
this
are you
is
so
not
big?
Your air.
Your air is down there, where my feet are.
Stay down.
Please do not bite my face. A bit less Disney-friendly is the fact that Jeff's temper would lead to serious threats sometimes. He was reported to have threatened to kill all of the Irvings' poultry that they used for food and income. And he even was reported to have said, quote, "You don't know what damage or harm I might do if I were roused. I could kill you all if I liked, but I won't."
End quote. I really enjoyed that. You should read the rest of the quotes.
I will.
Well, he also said, "I'll kill you and your chickens, too." Reminded of, like, the Wicked Witch of the West or something.
Your little dog, too. Oh, my gosh.
Well, anyways, all of this led to Jeff receiving quite a bit of attention and becoming a local celebrity of sorts. I mean, there's only 7 people on the island, so I don't know. I mean, I don't actually think there's 7, but it's a small amount. So
it's a small island.
Paranormal investigators would regularly come out to the house to try to debunk the phenomenon. But unfortunately, or coincidentally, the majority of the times investigators or press were there, Jeff wouldn't come out or say anything. Surprise, surprise.
The Irvings did end up sending imprints of Jeff's teeth and paws to an investigative journalist who ended up passing them on to the British Museum. The museum's experts concluded that the paw print probably belonged to a dog and definitely didn't belong to a mongoose. A first sample was also found to be dog hair that was thought to belong to the Irving's sheepdog.
And despite all of this, some of the locals still ended up sticking up for the Irvings and kind of reported their own interactions with Jeff. And while the town generally expressed their skepticism of the event, quote, "The general attitude is of outward skepticism, but inward nervousness. There is something there, but how can an animal talk? People in the village won't go near the place. No one will go there at night," end quote.
So a lot of the skepticism surrounding this event postulates that Vori made the entire thing up by throwing her voice and throwing pebbles and stuff like that. Some even think her mom was in cahoots with her, but many genuinely believe that James Irving had no idea.
Blame the woman. It must be hysteria.
Throwback to last week.
Exactly. Why is this?
Oh, Lord. That's actually a theory that's proposed in recent research and studies done on Jeff and the entire situation. Familial hysteria. It does make sense that this 13-year-old girl would just be kind of having fun with it, and it might have just gotten out of control for her. Apparently, a local man quotes his late mother-in-law saying that the Irvings, quote, "always had a mongoose to catch and eat the cockroaches, and it was at tea time that Vori would throw her voice as if the mongoose was talking," end quote.
But to the point that her parents would lie about it super broadly,
yeah.
I don't really know. I feel like hopefully they would have not done that,
yeah.
But who knows?
Like, maybe don't encourage your daughter who's lying. but I mean, maybe she was really convinced by it. She lived alone with her older parents in a super remote area of a super remote island. So she was literally in the middle of nowhere. Probably weren't a lot of other kids to play with. People propose that her curiosity and childlike fun may have been stifled, and Jeff may have been a friend or aspect of her kind of like lonely existence on the island.
I hadn't really thought of that, but I mean, we do keep mentioning there's like 7 people on this island.
Yeah, it's so tiny.
And this is kind of a time where there was a continued fascination with spiritualism still.
Yeah.
And then a cryptid craze happened in the 1930s onwards. So, you know, the Loch Ness Monster made her debut in, I think, like 1933 or something?
Yeah.
Something around
I know
then.
It was the 30s.
Yeah.
That was when those people saw him, like, cross the road or whatever.
Cross the road?
Yeah. In the 1930s, I think there were these people who, they were driving on this road in, like, next to Loch Ness, and they claimed that the Loch Ness Monster, like, crossed the road in front of them. And that was, like, one of the first big recorded sightings.
Interesting. I was thinking of the picture where
it looks
like a little
photo.
Brachiosaurus or something, yeah. But yeah. I didn't hear that I don't know. I always call her she.
Yeah,
she's a
why. She. I like her being a she.
But yeah. She's just crossing the road.
She's
like,
just chilling.
Yeah. This is my crosswalk.
I live out here, not you. Vori was apparently also very well-read, so she definitely would have known about spiritualism and, you know, the cryptid craze, and probably would have read reports of things like the Loch Ness Monster.
Mm-hmm. I feel like even if she was really intelligent, very well-read, and, you know, kind of quiet even so, I don't see a 13-year-old girl saying some of the things that Jeff said. Like, he's quoted as saying, quote, "I'll split the atom. I am the fifth dimension. I am the 8th wonder of the world," end quote. And I mean, the atom was split in 1932, so it still would have been culturally relevant in newspapers and such, but it still doesn't sound like something a teenage girl would say to me, but...
Vori was very ahead of her time.
Way
maybe.
Ahead.
I don't know. Vori and James were the ones that interacted with Jeff the most, but again, it kind of seems like it all comes back to Vori. Paranormal investigators consistently tried to get her alone, but her father wouldn't allow it, and that kind of brought the spotlight back onto him.
I don't really think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, he's protecting his 13-year-old daughter and keeping her out of the spotlight.
Exactly. Some of the investigators were definitely weirdos, and not in the good way like our fans. They were just very weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't want my kid alone with them. And that happened a lot during the spiritualist movement with, like, younger girls and women. Just a trigger warning here for people bothered by mentions of predatory behavior, but investigators would, you know, insist on being with them alone and checking them for props or things that they use for their quote-unquote acts through having them literally stripped down. So they really preyed on these girls and women. And
it's definitely not the first time that minors or minorities have been exploited or face predatory behavior in the face of having to prove themselves or their stories in this way. I think also just the fact that so many people, especially women, would get famous during the spiritualist movement for spiritualist things. And I'm sure that they're like small town celebrities. So that also comes with some creepy behavior from people.
I find it very interesting that a lot of the times these women who got famous during the spiritualism movement, a lot of the investigators that were pushing back at them were like all men.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is there this dichotomy between male and female in the spiritualism movement? Like, is it women were claiming a bit more power, a bit more respect in the world through the spiritualism movement, and
they didn't
the men didn't like it, and they also were like, we're gonna not only not let you have this power, we're gonna tear you down and prove you as a fake. It's very telling. It's very telling.
Kind of reminds me of how, like, today, a lot of times female singers and actresses, obviously they're held to a physical standard, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're judged for their appearance. But I think sometimes critics are harsher on them. If they have a movie that they're getting a lot of critical acclaim for, you can go online and just see so many men who are, like, making fun of their performance or, you know, saying, no, they weren't really that good, or, you know, things like that. And I think so much of that is, like, those women, they have power that they don't have.
I agree. I feel like it's so often that whenever a woman does something amazing, like even more recently in the 2020 Olympics, Simone Biles, so many of a lot of the negative comments that I saw were either from, you know, males saying this is what she signed up for, this is what she was expected to do, she's done it before, we don't get why she's having these issues, or you know, kind of more pick me girls that were agreeing with them.
Exactly.
But she competed in, I think, Worlds with a kidney stone, and she competed in, I think, another Olympics or something with broken toes. And not only that, but one of her medical doctors, another trigger warning here for sexual assault, he, you know, continuously assaulted her over the course of her career. So
she spoke out about that. Which that's a hard, you know,
and
thing
like
to go
going to the Olympics and continuing on in this sport where she faced that is just so admirable. And not only that, her aunt died during the Olympics as well.
Yeah.
And
she was going through it.
I wouldn't have been that strong regardless of whether I was an Olympic gymnast or not. Like, I respect her so much and her dedication to the sport, her dedication to her team, still supporting them, going out, cheering them on. I don't know. I just, I loved seeing her in this Olympics.
Something that I've loved watching her with this particular Olympic team is that because she's one of the older girls now, I really liked seeing the way that she sort of took care of the younger ones. You know, she would, you saw tons of like
Team
footage
mom.
Of her, you know, like, you know, helping them fix their hair and make sure, you know, their makeup was right and, you know, things like that. And I just think that's so sweet and is just, you know, women supporting women.
She's definitely blazing a path forward in terms of being a outspoken activist regarding her own experiences and making it better for the ones who come after her and, you know, her teammates now who are still growing and going into the sport. So, I mean, that was kind of an offshoot, but I love Simone Biles and we need to, you know, hype her up. But back to James and his daughter, Vori. I give props to James just because I would do the same thing. I wouldn't want a bunch of, you know, weird male investigators, I don't know, taking my daughter out to England or to, you know, take a tour around the island. I don't
Definitely not.
I mean, while it was, I think, more of a protective fatherly thing, it did make some doubts more apparent in terms of the actual story and people believing them, so.
But, you know, the thing is, the family really didn't try to conceal or, like, continue the hoax. They really made every detail known whenever it happened. I mean, they were very forthcoming with what they had experienced.
Yeah, and I know they had mentioned that Vori and their sheepdog had, like, a really good system for catching rabbits, and how the sheepdog would kind of terrify the rabbit into standing still, which rabbits will freeze.
Right.
Kind of like me. I'm a rabbit. Rabbits will freeze when when they're scared, and then Vori would creep up behind it and basically conk it in the head.
Oh my God.
But they didn't try to keep this not well known, because apparently Jeff would catch rabbits for them and help them to sell it to the local town in the market. But they didn't make the fact that Vori and the dog were also good at catching rabbits less known, to kind of, you know, reduce the chance of people being like, oh, it's just Vori and the dog.
I mean, so. I think that's the kind of thing that they couldn't have kept hidden, you know, because, I mean, any of their neighbors or friends probably would have known that.
I feel like it's such a small island.
Yeah.
It would be really hard to pull off such an elaborate. Extremely elaborate hoax, especially because, like we said earlier, a lot of their neighbors kind of did stick up for them and say that the family was sane mentally, they didn't have a history of lying, they were, you know, just regular people going about their business, and they didn't really have anything to profit from this, because apparently the fact that the farm was quote-unquote haunted by Jeff actually ended up, you know, negatively affecting them financially, because despite all these visitors, it actually took away from, like, the farm's property value and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it, to me, doesn't necessarily speak to we're a family that's trying to continue a hoax or keep up appearances for the sake of a hoax. So
yeah, it's just kind of one of those stories where the idea of it being a hoax doesn't really make sense. The idea of it being some sort of, like, hysteria also doesn't even really make sense, because they were, you know, of sound mind. Like, it doesn't seem like they were really going through anything.
I agree.
But also, it's such a strange story.
It really
is. It's like,
is.
I don't know if this is true.
There is a book that was released that was called Jeff, The Strange Tale of an Extraspectral Talking Mongoose by Christopher Joseph. And he includes a lot of the pictures that different paranormal and investigative journalists included while they were kind of studying this phenomenon. And, you know, there are quite a few pictures of what looks like a mongoose.
Yeah.
There are quite a few pictures of just some little track marks, the paws and the fur that was studied by the British Museum. And then there's also some that apparently is Jeff sticking his little hands out of the side of the house. And
so cute.
There's a photo of Jeff trying to, or sketch himself, do his own self-portrait, which was also demonstrating his ability to quote-unquote grasp a pencil. But to be fair, this sketch is, I don't know, to me it looks more like a very abstract depiction of Florida or something like that. It literally looks like a freaking cow, like an abstract cow or something.
It does look like a cow. But you know what? It kind of looks like a cow, but the cow doesn't have any legs. So it's just like the cow and then his body.
He barely has a body. It's just like the upper portion of his chest. And it's like, we're done.
Yes.
And
oh my gosh.
There's a bunch of other weird
Better
pictures.
Better than I could
do. Me too. Honestly, Jeff is a better artist than we could ever hope to be. There's a picture of a slit in the mouse boarding, which apparently Jeff threw a packing case needle at a Captain Dennis, and the slit is like 4 inches and shown by another knife by one of the paranormal investigators, but apparently Jeff threw a knife at one of them, so he was definitely a capricious little fellow.
Yeah, he called himself the eighth wonder of the world. I'm looking at some of these pictures now, and he's so cute.
He's literally the vine where it's like, either Sonic is a god or Sonic could kill God.
That's Jeff energy.
You know, he has the kind of powerful energy we all need to emulate
in
our daily lives.
Yeah,
we
need to have the confidence of Jeff,
exactly.
The talking mongoose, to,
very true.
You know, learn new languages quickly, to threaten our enemies.
Yes.
To support our loved ones and our family, you know, to, you know, compliment ourselves and consider ourselves the incredible beings that we are.
And also threaten the poultry of our loved ones, because...
Yes, because why not?
Why not at this point? But yeah, Jeff is definitely a strange little dude. He stayed in the house, and the family stayed in the house till James Irving died, and the family left their farm and the island in 1937.
Gotcha.
Apparently after that, Jeff was surprisingly quiet, and he wasn't really experienced again. So I later think that the home that he lived in was torn down.
Yeah. Oh,
so
I hope he got out okay.
Now
out,
just the land.
There.
I'm sure he did. He's a god.
He's true.
He can split the atom. He's the eighth wonder of the world.
He had to go work for the Manhattan Project.
That's awesome. They're like, this is our head scientist, Jeff. Mm-hmm.
He's very small. Please don't make fun of him.
What he lacks in size, he makes up for in knowledge, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
I think it's really interesting that this is, you know, kind of what came out of this event. This legacy of a talking mongoose that was definitely a little bit egotistical and
just a little bit
threatening as well, but also a polyglot. So, you know, kind of my ideal man, if you think about it. Jeff, if you're out there, I am single. Specifically Jeff the mongoose, not any other Jeffs. And I mean, okay.
I don't know. Yeah. There could be a really good Jeff out there. But we're looking for Jeff with a G.
Jeff with a G.
With a bushy tail.
Something I wanted to ask you is, we were talking about how we don't think this is necessarily a hoax.
Yeah.
But do you think there's a paranormal aspect to it? Because you are the skeptic of this podcast.
I don't know. Like, on one hand, it just seems so silly and, like, funny and ridiculous, absurd, that I'm like, okay, yeah, this is definitely not a ghost story. This is totally a hoax. But at the same time, they didn't really get anything out of it other than attention.
Mm-hmm.
So unless it was a hoax where Vori, she was doing it to be funny and then had to stick with it, you know, maybe she thought she was going to get in trouble. I don't know. Maybe that's what happened. But I just don't see any other option, really. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that there really was a mongoose there.
I do, too. I mean,
I wonder maybe if there was an actual ghost in their house, right? And the ghost was like, oh, there's this mongoose. I'm going to pretend to be the mongoose. You know what I mean? So the mongoose wasn't really the ghost, but...
Yeah. I mean, James Irving said it was a spirit inhabiting the body of a mongoose.
Yeah.
But other times he said it was, like, just a peculiar mongoose. But I don't know. It's hard for me as well because while I totally can see Vori kind of getting overboard with this little fun joke that she played, because I often have done the same thing when, you know, I'm messing around with accents. I just, you know, I throw on an accent for fun or do something for fun, and then I find myself having to commit to it a little more seriously than I want to when interacting with an individual in public or something. But there's also a theory that he's a witch's familiar and that a witch used to live on the island, but... The story itself is kind of this amalgamation of different mythological creatures.
Yeah.
And, like, a mongoose isn't necessarily the best description of what he is, but it's the closest that we can get. So,
I mean, definitely one thing that I noticed just from looking at the pictures of him, that whatever this supposed creature is, it looks bigger than the mongoose that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the ones that you can see, I know there's some at, I think maybe the DC Zoo. And there's some, obviously, there's tons of them in Hawaii, and they're small, squirrel-like.
Very much so.
So, I don't know, he seems a little bigger than that to me.
It is interesting to look at Manx, and Manx is kind of the description for, like, Isle of Man. It's the cultural term for their culture. And they kind of have these ideas about nature sprites, which is kind of interesting to me. I mean, and witches familiars also kind of plays a role in Manx folklore and history, but...
If he was a witch's familiar, he's, like, the coolest familiar ever.
I know, right?
Like, how cool would you be if your familiar was a mongoose? You know, none of the other witches at, like, the coven meeting are gonna have a mongoose. They're all gonna have, like, cats and birds.
I'm just picturing this, like, you know, really cool witch walking down the road and there's little mongoose, like, scurrying at her side. You know, apparently it's kind of this synthesis of Indian, Celtic, Christian, and, you know, 19th century spiritualism. And
which is really what spiritualism is a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spiritualism is definitely this hodgepodge
of stuff.
Exactly. Vori Irving never, even on her deathbed, confessed
None of them did.
Jeff was fake or what have you. So, people think that maybe she was thinking of Margaret and Kate Fox, who is also part of the spiritualist movement.
And they did, like, ventriloquism stuff, right?
They kind of started the spiritualist craze, honestly, and it swept through North America. And 40 years later, Margaret actually ended up confessing the entire thing was a hoax, and they demonstrated kind of how they did it. But, you know, the spiritualist community was so upset at this that... You know, Margaret actually ended up having to, like, recant her confession. Being like, no, it was real. Because she was literally getting death threats, like, being threatened on the street, that kind of thing. So, Vori, being very intelligent, very well read, she knew of this. And
she was, like, just afraid that people would kind of come for her.
Yeah.
Come at her.
But It's definitely an interesting case. I think it's more interesting than some other spiritualist movement tales.
So. I mean, I think a lot of the spiritualist stuff, it's hard to keep track of which kind of story goes with which person because they're all really similar. But this one is unique and different.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You don't forget who it happened to.
Had a little animal, familiar ghost critter running around their house.
I definitely think it's one of my favorite little... I mean, I don't know if I would classify Jeff as a cryptid, but...
He's a ghost cryptid. A ghost cryptid?
At Google. Is this a thing?
Okay, there's this one picture of him, and it is a cat.
Which one?
He's, like, on a fence post. It is definitely
a cat.
Okay,
that looked like a cat to me as
well. That's a cat, right?
I thought that was a cat.
There's no way that's not a cat.
Apparently, this band called Lemon Demon, which I'm becoming increasingly intrigued by, they released a song entitled Eighth Wonder, which is about Jeff, and it's on their seventh album, which is called Spirit Phone.
Ooh.
And the more I'm looking into this, the more I'm like, maybe we should feature some of this on our podcast, because there's some awesome cover art and there's some really cool stuff on here, but... We will post a lot of these pictures to Instagram, so over to our Instagram, at Wicked Weird and Grim, to see a lot of this and also get a little bit more acquainted with Jeff himself and, you know, how other people saw him in the news and some pictures, which, I don't know, don't necessarily reinforce anything, but...
Yeah.
I keep looking at this picture of him on the fence post.
The cat one or
the
other
one?
To
be fair, it looks like a chicken. Like, I could see it being a chicken.
Maybe. Yeah, I could see a chicken there, too.
I mean, I guess I could see a cat if it didn't have ears.
It's a cat and a chicken.
Yeah. I'm also finding a bunch of fan art of Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Me, too.
And, I'm kind of in love with it.
I really love it.
Oh, no. The furries. Oh, no.
Oh,
we're,
dear.
We're going to stop there. That's going to be our stopping point.
Let's never with the furries. We can avoid them. I've not found them yet, thankfully.
There's, like, a comic of him being like, I am the fifth dimension, and I'll split the atom. I may be small, but I am the eighth wonder. And I shall haunt like the Buggane, with such noise and clanking chains. And then, and I have hands, and I have feet. I'll never die. I am a freak. Thou wilt never know who I am. I need to use half of these quotes in our podcast.
All of the quotes are just so funny. They're just so dramatic and, like, nonsense.
Exactly.
And they're just weird.
You know, Vori was a very shy, soft-spoken girl. So unless she used this as a method of self-expression and could hide behind this image of a talking mongoose, I really don't see her saying a lot of this stuff.
Somebody really should have brought her, like, a ventriloquist dummy. They could have been a mongoose. But it could have been, like, it could have looked like a mongoose.
Like, she should be that person who carries around the puppet and only speaks to their puppet because they're...
And terrifies me.
Yeah, I feel the same.
Puppets are creepy.
I feel like I don't get as freaked out by that stuff. I just recently watched a horror movie, and it is called The Hollow Child, and it's about changelings. And it's really interesting to me because the more I read, the more I see that demons, as they're described in a lot of Judeo-Christian Abrahamic belief, is really just kind of a bastardization of ancient deities and gods that the Christians didn't want worshipped anymore. So they kind of depicted them in this evil, malicious light. And apparently a lot of the descriptions of quote-unquote possessions or infestations and demonic entities kind of thing, many people believed that demons are actually closer to the fae.
Yeah, I think we talked about
that. It's very interesting. As someone who grew up hearing stories about Irish Celtic fae, I completely believe it. I definitely think I'm more scared of the Celtic fae than I would be of Abrahamic demons, just because I'm more convinced that...
It's like a misunderstanding.
Yeah, a misunderstanding. It's not so much. But yeah, so now I'm watching all these horror movies about demonic possession and stuff in a new light. I'm like, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but whatever it is, Jeff was...
He was a wacky
something.
Little guy.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode with us. It was definitely a little bit shorter than usual, but we wanted to do something fun, something a bit more weird, not as grim and serious. Yeah. The last two topics
a little bit silly.
Were kind of very heavy.
Yeah.
Had a lot of deaths in it, and we just really wanted to do something that was just upbeat and fun for once. So
yeah.
Thankfully, there is no death in this except for the death of rabbits and perhaps poultry.
Yes, but they would die anyway. They were going to get killed anyway. So.
Very true. Vori would conk them over the head with a stick. So.
So funny.
But yeah, definitely check out our socials. As I said earlier, we're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Instagram and Facebook are at Wicked Weird and Grim. Twitter is at Wicked Weird Grim. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to support us that way.
Please do.
And
rate and review us on iTunes, please, please. We would love to see that 5-star review.
Yes. It'd be super awesome. Let us know how we're doing, how we can improve moving forward. Our audio is hopefully better to your guys' ears. Our first episode was kind of iffy. We're still figuring out our placement and how we would do things. But from here on out, I think even the second episode,
I think it's definitely better.
It's definitely better. We're improving as we go, and I've stopped saying exactly all the time so that my father is not turning into an alcoholic taking a shot every time I do. So it's a learning process, but we are learning. So
I'm trying to learn not to interrupt you all the time. That's the one criticism my mom had. She was like, stop interrupting her.
I feel like I also interrupted you, so yeah. I feel like we normally do that in conversation, though.
It's just because we're talking like we are normally, mm-hmm. so, you know.
We're constantly talking over each other, but we're making sense to each other as we're doing it, because
we're making sense to y'all.
Yeah, we're just connecting our points of view, but as we said earlier, this is kind of the podcast for the unexplainable and incomprehensible.
Yes, so. And, you know, if it's incomprehensible, then it just is, I guess.
it's our quirk. It's just our quirky thing. It's the thing that sets us apart. Thanks again for listening, guys. And we will talk to you again on our next Wicked Weird Wednesday with the Grimm Sisters.
Woohoo!
Bye.
Bye.
You waved again.
I did.
Oh, Lord.
I feel like it's really cute. One day when we do a live show, it's going to come in handy. Yeah, I'm going to be like, see, now I'm waving at real people.
It's such a bad habit of like talking for so long.
I know.
In the first half of the episode. Will we get better with time?
No, I don't think so.
It's definitely no.
Oh dear, that's like the one thing we're just not gonna,
Erin was talking about how we were singing the Backyardigans in our first episode, and I was telling her how in the second we were singing the Jeffrey Bezos song. And then I was like, what shall we do in the third one?
Oh, no.
And we were like, a single mom who works two jobs. Because we could not stop singing that when we were out. And Erin was holding all of our phones while we were at the club. And it was like the TikTok that they sent to the group. Oh, and we were like, a single mom who works two jobs, who loves her kids and never stops. Something, something, something of a fighter. I'm a survivor. Wow. Melodious.
Based on this experience, nobody would ever know that I am actually a decent singer.
Nobody would know we're actually decent at singing from, like, how we sing on our podcast. We're just, like, besmirching any type of credit we have in the choral industry.
One day, we're gonna have to sing something for real. Like, we're gonna have, like, sing, like, a Christmas carol or
something
like that.
We're gonna be like, today we're discussing the real-life Phantom of the Opera.
The mic will just blow out at some point.
It just, there's, like, a huge spike.
Sorry,
we cannot be trusted.
I have to stand like 3 feet. Like, I'll have to stand like up the stairs for it to sing.
We'll be like, we're so singing opera, which means your eardrums should be blown out.
But as the tappings and knockings continue on, the family shifted their. Wait, that was bad. It's a snake.
It's in for sound.
I'm a snake.
I'm a snake. I'm a slithery little snake. Look into my eyes, Mowgli. It kind of lingered. They said it wasn't frightened of them, and it kind of lingered. English is hard.
It is.
It reminds me of the short story by Rudyard. It reminds me of the short story by Rudyard.
I think it's Rudyard.
Rudyard. Okay. It reminds me of the.
You have the ADHD mouth today.
I know, right? I can't even get this out. How am I supposed to say Ricky Tikki Tavi? Flight or fret? No. About whether we have
a bit less of the
la 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 la.
Sorry, I had to burp again. Every time.
It's our bodies are like, you must hear us on the podcast.
Familia.
Ooh, Espanol.
Espanol.
Familia. Historia de familia.
Apparently, a local man quotes his late lover.
His lover-in-law. Country roads. West Virginia. Alabama. Insist. It's the best.
Apparently, a local man quotes his late
mother-in-law. his late mother-in-law.
Why?
You can do it, Caroline. I believe in you.
Okay. I didn't take a big enough breath before I started talking, so I was like,
I've run out.
Oh my gosh, hang on, I gotta yawn. See?
Our bodies. Our bodies are not made for podcasting. What?
I'm just struggling.
Okay.
Okay.
Apparently, Jif.